these are things I get to do that he doesn't. So I feel like that moment just changed how I viewed everything. And instead of, you know, letting that ruin me, right, with grief and all of the other things that kind of come along with that, I decided to use that as like the catalyst for like living a life that I could be so proud of, and one that I think that if he looked down on me would be so proud of who I've become. And I do it knowing that like there's something greater out there watching, and like that it matters.
Hi, welcome to the Growth Mixtape Podcast, and I'm your host, Bob Mathers. We have one rule here. We're going to chase our curiosity way outside our comfort zones. The more uncomfortable and awkward, the better. We're going to talk to people you've never heard of doing jobs you didn't know existed. We're going to hear human stories about the things that connect us, what we can learn from one another, and what we can take away to apply to our own lives. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first, but just like songs on a mixtape, they create something memorable and emotional. Today we talked to Christy Feltaruso, who's a chief customer officer, a LinkedIn influencer, and a customer success strategist. Yeah, she's a very big deal. When I started this podcast, it was all about talking to people from way outside my comfort zone to talk about anything other than what I did for a living. And that hasn't changed. But Christy and I both work in very similar circles. So this conversation was a bit of an experiment. What if two people who did the same thing for a living got together and talked about anything but work? What would we have in common? And what could we learn from each other? And it turns out it was one of the most vulnerable, thoughtful, and emotional conversations I've ever had. And it makes me wonder what I might be missing by staying in my lane and the conversations I could be having with people if I were as brave as Christy to talk about things we just never talk about. Christy talks about growing up on Long Island, losing her brother in a motorcycle accident, the pain she still carries from old family trauma, her complicated relationship with alcohol, and her journey with sobriety. We also explore the fragility of self-confidence and the quiet courage it takes to completely be yourself online. Now, full disclosure, the most memorable part of this conversation for me happened after we hung up. I sat in this chair and I cried. And I can't explain why. The closest thing I can come up with is that it's conversations like this that I've been searching for. Please enjoy Christy Feltaruso. All right, Christy Feltaruso, I can't tell you how excited I am for this conversation.
Bob, I feel like when we first chatted, we should have recorded that because that in itself, I think, was like one of my favorite conversations. But now in preparing for today, I don't know. I think of all the podcasts I've ever joined, this is going to be my favorite.
Well, oh my God, that's, yeah, we'll see. Those are some high expectations to live up to. There's a couple of things. There's a number of reasons I'm excited about this. But one is it's a bit of an experiment because, as you know, anybody that's listened to the podcast or has even listened to the intro, I wanted to have a podcast where I talked about anything other than what I did for a living, because there's lots of amazing customer success podcasts out there. And so I wanted to use this as an excuse to talk about people that I would never normally come across, see what I could learn, et cetera. Now, this is an interesting conversation because you're the first guest I've had on that is squarely in the same customer success field that I work in. And yet we're here to talk about anything other than that.
Which is, I think, why I might be so excited for this conversation. Because, Bob, you know, listen, we're all having the same discussions, whether it's on LinkedIn, in a Slack group, in another community. The conversations are very similar. And while I love, love, love what we do, and I am so passionate about it, man, I just want to have a conversation where I'm not talking about, I don't know, a playbook, a health score, a debate, or telling somebody what's dead and what's not, or saying it depends. I mean, like all of these things, like to take a break from that is, I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so you were born and raised in New York, right? And you still live there. I guess I have this stereotype in my mind or this story about what that would be like. How would you describe what growing up and living in New York is like?
Okay. So this is where I get to like give some context. Yes, I live in New York, but I live on Long Island. Okay. And so Long Island might as well be its own state. It operates very differently than the rest of New York. And I think the interesting thing about New York is, like, if you go upstate New York, you're like in the country, right? Like, and you go all the way upstate in New York, you're like by Canada. And so it's very interesting because I think people, when they think of New York, they only think of Manhattan. And so, yes, Manhattan has had a part of my story. I worked in the city for 15 years. I loved it. I had great memories of that. But, like, I'm a Long Island girl, okay? Which means, like, I'm a suburban mom, all right? I got strip malls. I have a driveway. I have neighbors and a pool. And, like, we just do normal things that anywhere USA, it's the same vibe, okay? We have a different accent. We have better pizza. And nobody is going to beat my bagels. But outside of that, like, there's not much different to where I'm living than probably most people are.
All I knew about you when we first chatted was that you, you know, you're this big deal on LinkedIn. We'll talk about that later. All I knew is the conversations we had in comments, and that you were kind of a New York girl. And I had this vision in my head. I guess I was, you know, you're well put together. You seem very polished. You have lots of followers. And honestly, I thought, I don't know, you know, what this conversation is going to be like. You know, I expect she's going to be more interested in talking about herself than me. She's not going to be a very good listener. She's going to be doing email during our conversation. And none of that was true. It was just the most kind of kind and vulnerable and thoughtful conversation. And it really struck me. And I've reflected on that. It's like, yeah, man, the stereotypes and the conclusions and biases that we have around people, they're really powerful. And if you hadn't reached out on LinkedIn and had an honest, like a real conversation with us, I probably would be thinking, yeah, that Christy, you know, she seems kind of full of herself, or despite how vulnerable you are on LinkedIn.
Which sucks, because I wonder if the other 50,000 people who are following me think the same thing. Like, I'm like, oh, do I have like a, am I putting out a bad vibe there? I'm like, now I'm all concerned about like what my brand actually, what the perception of that is.
No, but that's the funny thing, is your brand is very vulnerable and honest and authentic. But there was something about this New York girl that I had in my head. It was like, yeah, that just can't be true. That's just something she's created.
Like, I feel like I'm actually more vulnerable, more authentic, more of these things in real life than I feel like even social media would portray. So I think there's the optics of like, do I swing the pendulum one way or the other? And I think I go this extreme, like, oh my gosh, I'm a big pile of mush once you get to know me.
Well, it's absolutely true. My wife, she's not on LinkedIn. And I talk about things on LinkedIn that my best friends and my wife probably, it's not that they don't know about me, but I don't talk about. So it is this interesting thing where I feel comfortable sharing things with perfect strangers that my best friends probably wouldn't even know about me.
Same.
So I talked about how you come off as really confident, kind of the biggest personality in the room. What would people be surprised to learn about you?
I am so uncomfortable all the time. The perception is, right, is that I am confident. I'm confident in what I know, right? And I think that's where my confidence comes from. It's like experience builds confidence. But if you would have talked to me, I don't know, even a decade ago, you would have had a very different version of me, one that like was riddled with self-doubt and insecurities. And I don't like the phrase imposter syndrome, but sure, I guess just to use a term that people are most familiar with, all of that. I mean, I grew up in my customer success journey surrounded by everybody who went to like Ivy League schools and had MBAs and, you know, went to Stanford and Duke and Harvard and Yale and all these schools. And I'm like, nope, I went to some rinky dink local university on Long Island with a PR major. I have a bachelor's and like, I don't know, that's it. I wasn't world traveled. I didn't get my passport until I was 32 to get married, because we got married in the Bahamas. So like, you know, I grew up kind of sheltered and I'm not very cultured. And so I think this perception that I'm overly confident and that I know it all and that I'm, you know, I could create a presence, it's not actually what I'm feeling on the inside. I think it's a little bit of like me always convincing myself that I belong here, that I know what I'm talking about because I've done it. But the constant reminder has to be there for me. Like I don't wake up every morning thinking like, oh, I know everything and I'm gonna go crush it again on LinkedIn, or I'm gonna go kill it with that customer. No, like that's not what's happening inside, right? So the outside and I think the inside are two very different versions of Christy.
Yeah, that there's so much about that that resonates, Christy. And sometimes I notice that, yes, I can be confident, but how fragile it is. Like I go and I'm feeling really good about my day. And then one email, it's like, oh yeah, you're right. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. How to, you know, they found me out. They finally figured it out. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Despite a body, an entire career worth of evidence that I know what I'm doing, how fragile it is. And there's something about a lack of resilience that I suffer from, I think.
No, you know what's so interesting is I don't think I've had anyone actually put it that way. But now that you've said it, I think that is the best way to describe it, because I could feel so confident in what I'm doing. And it is, to your point, it's based off of evidence. It's based off of work, right? I've been doing this job for 13 years. I know what I'm talking about. I've had the experiences. I have the proof. But the minute someone questions me in a way that like makes me reflect, I like shudder. I'm like, wait, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this whole thing is a lie. Like I immediately... I'm like, I shrivel up. And so I think that's what's interesting about social media is that you are so vulnerable, right? You're putting things out there and you're allowing yourself to be susceptible to judgment and debate. And all those things should be good, right? Like, you know, they should be building me to be a better version of myself and like open my eyes to new ways of thinking and stuff. But I'm also like petrified. Every time I say something that could be controversial or that someone might have a differing opinion, I have to be prepared to remind myself that it's not a judgment on me. It's someone who might have a different experience and a different perspective. But man, yeah, fragile. Best way to describe it.
Well, there's so much of that that I want to come back to. Before you do, I've been thinking recently about the kind of trajectory of my life. And I always love thinking about these tiny little micro decisions we make every day that could, you know, change the trajectory of our life. But if I look back, there are probably three or four things, you know, I think of them as forks in the road, things that happened to me that I cannot imagine my life if that hadn't happened, right? Like it changed everything about my life. And I'm wondering if you look back on your life, what is the first one of those that you remember?
I'm always going to go back to one that might not be the first I remember, but I think the one that's most impactful, and that's losing my brother. 18 years ago, my brother passed away. He was in a motorcycle accident. He was intoxicated, and he was in a collision by himself, so he did not injure anybody else, but he immediately died on impact. It was 2 weeks after his 30th birthday. My dad was married before he married my mom. So I have a half brother and a half sister. My half brother and I are super close. He's 13 years older than me, but my nephews, I love them so much. My brother and I are very close. My sister and I, not as close. That's a whole nother podcast. But, you know, growing up, it was just me and my brother. And it's, you know, a sibling relationship, I think, is very special. It's very unique. It's different. It's unlike any other relationship. You two grow up in the same home. You have, you know, a shared journey and experiences. And so, my brother passing away was really difficult for me. At the time he passed, we weren't super close. He and I had kind of gone on like different paths in life where I was like more focused on like building a family and getting an education and like, you know, more of the straight and narrow. Okay. And so my brother made different decisions in life and went on his own journey and his own path. And so I think that kind of like created a wedge. But then all of a sudden, you know, I get a phone call one morning and my dad just said, you know, hurry up and come home. There's been an accident. And I just thought like, okay, maybe my brother was in an accident. Maybe he's in the hospital, broke a leg, broke an arm. I remember walking into my home and I vividly remember like, you know, my dad was upstairs in their bedroom and my grandfather who was living with us at the time, he was standing in the hallway and my mom opened the door and she just said, Keith died. And I just remember like my dad, who I've never seen show any emotion, like, I mean, ever, collapse on the bed, hysterically crying. My grandfather kind of run into his room and my mom just collapsed in my arms. And honestly, that entire experience and like the weeks and months that followed just changed everything for me because I saw life very different. You know, my brother's always my older brother, right? So even fast forward, when I hit 30, I was like, okay, now I'm the same age my brother was when he died. When I hit 31, I'm like, my brother doesn't know 31. When I hit 35. He didn't know 35. When I celebrated my 40th, he didn't know 40, right? So as I continue to age, and even as I talk to my daughter about this, I'm like, you know what's so weird is like, Keith will never be as old as I am, right? And so I kind of like live my life now being very thoughtful and grateful that every day I live is a day that my brother didn't get to. And so I get to make choices and I get to do things, even if it's, I don't know, checking email and getting on calls. Like, this is stuff, it's very mundane, but these are things I get to do that he doesn't. So I feel like that moment just changed how I viewed everything. And instead of, you know, letting that ruin me, right, with grief and all of the other things that kind of come along with that, I decided to use that as like the catalyst for like living a life that I could be so proud of, and one that I think that if he looked down on me would be so proud of who I've become, and, you know, the mom I've been, and watching me raise a family, like all these things. I feel like I do it knowing that like there's something greater out there watching, and like that it matters.
Christy, thanks for sharing that. You know, I guess the biggest, the first fork in the road for me was, yeah, losing my dad when I was 23. And you're right. It's like, because he was 48. So I turned 48 a few years ago, right? And then you start living days that they never had. And I try to use it as fuel for staying present and being grateful, et cetera. But it's also, you know, life gets in the way and it's easy to still get pissed off at little things. So it's amazing how sometimes these forks in the road. We had a really serious thing happen with my son last year. And I was another one of these forks in the road. Like it's human nature to kind of revert back into this comfort zone and get pissed off about these tiny little things. And these big forks are kind of, you know, the universe's way of reminding us that none of this shit matters. And so I love that story that you just shared. Yeah.
I know you're going to need to pivot here because I have to rebound emotionally here, Bob.
Yeah. I know. Me too. It's going to be okay. So you mentioned earlier social media, and I'm not on any social media other than LinkedIn, which is where you and I cross paths. I could talk about this forever because I've got a kind of a complicated relationship with it, but you've hit 50,000 followers, and that's like a massive thing. And I'm curious, like, how would you describe the journey from, I don't know, 1,000 from where most of us start? I mean, we all have to start at zero. Like, I can't even imagine getting to 50,000.
So I think here's what's so funny. I actually went to go look this up last year because somebody else posted something about it, but in May, I'll be on LinkedIn for 20 years. My LinkedIn profile was created in May 2005. So while I'm thinking like, yeah, 50,000, I'm also thinking like 20 years, 20 right. years of having this social media to like curate 50,000 people that care to hear what I have to say. You know, it's interesting when I started LinkedIn, we'll fast forward, right? Like obviously not 20 years ago, but when I started being more active on it, it was an avenue for me to like learn from other people. So it was more me proactively seeking advice and guidance and reaching out to folks and using it that like as that kind of a mechanism. And then I started sharing my thoughts or learnings. And the more I did, the more people were interested in it. And I found that people were going through similar journeys as I was. And then you fast forward, like when I had broken into customer success, there weren't all of these people posting about customer success every day. In fact, it was like quite the opposite. You had nobody posting about it. So I was just kind of like floundering around trying to figure things out. But because of my experience, I said, you know what? I'll never have anybody go on the same journey that I did, where I had to like fail so publicly all the time. I want to just commit to this selfless giving. And so I think it's been really cool to see how many people find value in my stories and my learnings and who care to know about me, because I also post personal things as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been like really crazy just to see it continue to grow. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. All I know is that like, I know it means something. Mm. I don't know what it means, but it means something, right? It means that what I'm doing, maybe it's validation for me. If I'm posting all this stuff and people care enough to follow me, I must be saying something that's of value to them, right? So I feel like if anything, it's just very validating to know that what I'm sharing is driving impact and that it matters to others.
You and I were back and forth a little bit because I was watching your journey towards 50,000, which, you know, you just kind of crested that in the last day or so, because I hit 10,000, you know, 2 weeks ago. And it was a bit, I don't know, humbling or embarrassing. Like I woke up on the Monday morning and I was 80 away. I'm like, okay, great. And all week I was trying to write these posts and I thought, okay, today's the day. This is going to be great. This is going to go viral. This is going to push me over. And every post just landed with a thud. I'm like, fuck, like five followers. And it was Thursday and I was on this mastermind kind of Zoom call. Shout out to Vienna Waits, this program I'm in. And I was five away. I'm like, everybody, I need your help. I can't deal with this anymore. I just need to get this over with. So I put my LinkedIn profile in the Zoom chat, and somebody in the group actually went on LinkedIn right away and said, hey, if you don't know Bob Mathers, he's a great follow. And I got it over with. And I was just like a sigh of relief, but I was a bit embarrassed about how preoccupied I was with this number of strangers following me on social media. I'm like a 54-year-old man. Like, why on earth should I care about this so much?
I don't know, Bob. I do too. I think everyone does. And people that say that they don't, they're lying. But, you know, it's like, I think it's trying to figure out like why, right? Like, I don't talk publicly. Like, I'm not going to be one of those people that does the like, hey, I hit 50,000 follower posts. Yay, thanks. And like, I that's not my vibe. But in my house, you better believe that when I saw that thing hit 50, my family chat got a screenshot and said, I did it. Yay. I mean, so I celebrate it internally where I can be embarrassed around my family. But for me, that's not what I want to focus on. And so I try to like create some church and state in my head and say like, okay, like I'm excited because it's a milestone and I want to celebrate those milestones. But like there's still work to do. And that was never my intention when I started this journey. So I don't want to make that the focal point, right? I just want to continue to share good content that resonates with people. And so I want to continue with that just being the focus, at least that I put out there and I kind of focus on in my day-to-day.
Yeah. And so you post like pretty much every day, and I post probably four times a week. And I'm not going to lie, I struggle to come up with four original ideas a week. So how do you access this creativity and come up with these posts that are just so good?
Well, I appreciate that you're saying that they're good. I think sometimes I feel like they're good. Other times I feel like, ugh, what was that? So don't forget, like I sit in a CCO seat, right? So it's all I do all day, every day. So every single email, conversation, exchange with somebody on my team, thing I read, support ticket, like every single thing I live every single day is content. So I have a notebook next to me that is a weekly calendar notebook. It's like a 5 day a week calendar. And the minute I have an idea, it gets slotted into a box. And so I actually have 5 weeks worth of content ideas already kind of pre-built out of things that happened that I did. And I found that like content creation for me wasn't about like giving people tips and advice necessarily, but it was more like sharing my story. So I like to think that people are coming along with me on my journey. So even today I had a post and I talked about like the power of like CSMs using support tickets. Well, let me just tell you, like, we've been struggling with support tickets and volume and increases. And so I've been spending a lot of time deep in tickets and I've been partnering with the CSMs on like, how do we parse through this and how do we find learnings and lean in? And so again, this is just par for the course for me because it's just something I'm doing every single day. So I think my bigger challenge, Bob, is like, I have so much content in my head that I'm like, is it wrong to post 2, 3, 4 times a day? Like, I feel like I could produce that much content because every interaction is something worth sharing.
It's interesting you say that because I haven't been at it as long as you, but I have found having a place to share my ideas, and I love the way you said that, share my story, is actually helping me find my voice and clarify my ideas and figuring out, you know, what it is that is unique that I can offer the world. And it has occurred to me that one day in the future, I will sign off LinkedIn. And where am I going to put all of that creative energy? Have you ever thought about that? Is it a book? Is it, you know, what is it?
Oh my gosh, Bob, don't even talk about that. I don't even know where I would put it because right now I'm putting it everywhere. So between LinkedIn, my newsletter, my Substack, my where else am I putting content? I am writing a book, so that's a whole other conversation. But like, I'm putting all of my stuff in all of these places. But recently my husband and I were chatting and I looked over to my daughter. I'm like, when I die, are you going to take over my LinkedIn account? I just need to make sure that I have a plan here. Like, I just, I don't want anyone to worry about where plan. I am. I got to keep the content going. And she looked at me and said, please, can we not talk about you dying? And all I was concerned about is like, who's going to log in? Like, I'm like, dude, how do we do this? So I hadn't really thought about like life after LinkedIn. And because to your point, it's such a big part of my daily routine. It's not even like just coming up with content and doing this. It's like literally every single day. At night, I curate my content for the next day. I start my drafts and then like try to get something up and out by 7 a.m., you know, schedules permitting. So it's like so embedded in how I just run my day. I don't know. I think I would panic, Bob. I don't know. I don't have a succession plan yet. Now you make me nervous. Like I should. Now you gave me something else to be paranoid about.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, one of the things that I've always admired, and I'm sure is a big reason why you've got as many followers as you do, is you seem to have found this kind of balance between informative and vulnerable and humble. And a couple of things, how have you found that balance, or how do you keep that balance? And are there things that you still will not talk about?
I don't know that there's things that I won't talk about. I definitely think that there are things that I have to be thoughtful about like how I share them or like what I want to share. But like, really, I don't know. Anything can be content. Like my daughter jokes, she goes, if I wasn't around, what would you write about? I'm like, I don't know, just customer success. But I love bragging about you too.
Right.
You know, in terms of balance, I think, listen, I want most of my content to be the content that the people that are following me can benefit from. And that helps them advance in their customer success journey. But there is this part of me that like, we're following people, right? Social media is about connections and people. It's not just about content. So my goal here is to let people in and learn a little bit about me as they kind of follow me. And I think that builds trust. It builds credibility. It builds relationships. I don't know that I have like a set 2 times a week, I'm going to share something personal. But like when there is something that is personal, that is meaningful to me, I feel like it's okay to share it. Because it's who I am. I don't have a professional life and a personal life. Like I have a life and I feel comfortable blending those two things. And I don't know that I necessarily need to separate them entirely. I think I'm thoughtful about to the extent in which I share, right? Like where is it appropriate? What lines do I draw? So I think that's where I try to focus the balance, but not, oh, this is LinkedIn content. This is Instagram content. Like there isn't, there's just content. This is me. It's just, I try to think about my audience, not myself.
Yeah, that resonates a lot. I think I used to have very rigid walls between home and work and different parts of my life. And as I break down those walls on LinkedIn or even in conversations with clients, I do find it resonates differently. And I'm just better at everything.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, sometimes that my personal content performs better than like my thoughtful customer success content. I'm like, okay, cool. Like everyone cares that I got my mom a dog, but nobody cares about this like new program I launched.
Yeah.
So it's like a little bit of just opening yourself up. And I think the cool thing is it makes me approachable for folks. Like I can't tell you how many times I'm like at an event or something and somebody comes up to me and they're like, you don't know me, but I feel like I know you. And, you know, it builds an instant connection where I'm like, great, like let's chat then. Like, fill me in on you then, because I'm like, if you already know so much about me, then we don't need to talk about me. Let's talk about you. And it builds this instant bond where you can take what you're doing here on social media and translate it into real deep-rooted relationships. Like I joke all the time, but it's not a joke. But if you go through my cell phone right now and looked at the text messages that I have, 85% of the conversations I have going are with customer success people. And probably majority of them are folks that I met here on the internet. And so those are my people now, but it only came from the content that I was sharing and letting people in and being vulnerable and, you know, letting people in. So I think that there is value in it. And the people that are like, nope, that's not content for LinkedIn. Like I challenge you to tell you that like your strategy is broken. You're thinking about it the wrong way.
Hey, it's Bob, and I'm taking the Growth Mixtape on the road in a series of keynote speeches inspired by the stories of my amazing guests. At their core, these signature talks are about how to get you and your teams off autopilot and stop settling for small incremental improvements. This isn't going to come from spewing business advice. My podcast is full of people that have done incredible things, and every one of them struggles with self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and the crippling fear of judgment that holds so many of us back. They've also found ways through it by rediscovering their creativity, their curiosity, and the confidence to do scary things. Imagine the power of bringing these vulnerable stories to life, live and on stage, to help you and your teams hit your targets, find your voice, and be the rock stars you are. Book me for your next event at bobmathers.ca. Now back to the show. Well, you talked about LinkedIn, so you had a really great post, and it was sort of like your top 10 life lessons. Number one was not everyone will like you. Number two was the perfect time will never come. And so it wasn't a list of just like, you know, fluffy woo-woo things that you would find anywhere else. There was something about each one that was particularly insightful. I could tell you spent time reflecting and choosing your words carefully. So it's a great list. But there was one that really stood out to me. It was number seven. The people you love the most can hurt you the worst. And I wanted to ask you about where that came from.
Bob, are we recording a podcast or are we doing a therapy session? I just need to know so it sets the tone for the rest of this. I have had some family stuff. You know, when my brother passed away, my mom's whole side of the family like turned on us, which was very weird and like a very bizarre reaction to our loss. My grandfather at the time looked at me and said the wrong grandchild died. I've had so many people in my life hurt me. And it's like, you know, where do you go from there, right? And so instead of being the victim to these situations, I've become very comfortable with like saying, okay, we're good here, and like cutting people off. But to be honest with you, I think about every single one of these people all the time. I cannot compartmentalize it. I am deeply hurt by all of these situations. And, you know, the people that cut us off when my brother died, that's 18 years ago. I was just talking about some of these stories with my girlfriend who I work out with last week. Okay, so 18 years ago, and these conversations are still things that I'm having to talk to and feelings that I have to navigate and emotions that I have to deal with. I don't know. I feel like I've just lived a life of family specifically turning their backs on us and like hurting us and hurting my parents. And, you know, it sucks because these are the people that you trust the most and you assume won't hurt you because why? They're your family and they love you. And nope, not the case. And in fact, quite the opposite. I've found that people who are not blood relatives to me have loved me and showed up for me and cared for me in ways that like my family never did.
Man. Yeah. I had similar things that have happened when my dad died. It kind of fractured the family. There's still, and that was 30 years ago, and there's still an entire side of the Mathers family that I've never talked to. I don't know where they are. And again, I guess it's one of those forks in the road. It's hard to imagine my life differently because it's been so long. I guess if I had to find some peace with it, it's just that especially, you know, you talk about now that I have kids, you've talked about your daughter. Like, I can't imagine the trauma of that happening, losing a kid, and what fucked up behaviors I would engage in, because I cannot imagine what that would do to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And honestly, I'm just so hurt by all of these things. And I wish I didn't care, but I just didn't get closure in so many of these situations. And I think that's the big thing is like, I just wanted to know why. I don't know, tell me why. And like, now I'm a grown up, right? So it's 18 years later from some of these things. And it's like, I don't know, can we sit down? Like, I would just want to know why. Like, I don't even want a relationship. Can I just get some closure and put it to bed? And so, I mean, thankfully I'm married to a saint of a man who helps me navigate these feelings when they come up, but it's still tough, right? Like it'll never not hurt. That bothers me more than probably the situation is I wish I could just compartmentalize it and put it away somewhere and ship it off.
Wow. Yeah. To pivot again, one of the things I was excited to talk to you about was your journey with sobriety. Yeah. And we've sort of bantered back and forth on LinkedIn about it. And it's occurred to me that I really don't have anyone I can talk to about this. And don't get me wrong. I love my wife, my friends, all amazing people, but they all still drink. And we can talk about it, but I can't expect them to understand really what it's like. And I don't have anyone else to talk about it. So
yeah,
let's get into it.
So, I mean, I think it's important to give some context as to like why, right? I think it's always a good place to start is like, why do you make the decision to drink or not to drink? And I mean, like, let's state some very obvious things that I feel like nobody just wants to admit because it's socialized so much. But like, alcohol is poison. And so nobody has a healthy relationship with poison. So when people are out there like, no, I just have a healthy relationship with it. It's like, no, do you have a healthy relationship with crack? Do you have a healthy relationship with heroin? Like, all of this stuff is the same. It's just so socially accepted that alcohol is just a part of how we celebrate and how we socialize. And it's the center of so much of what we do as a society that we've normalized that it's a drug and it's okay. So to be honest with you, I don't know that I've ever had a healthy relationship with alcohol. My grandfather was an alcoholic. I've had plenty of people on my mom's side and my dad's side struggle with alcoholism. And if I had to like look back and think about like, did I have a problem? I probably would say no, but like if I really was being honest with myself, I would say yes. Because I didn't drink every day. And I think that's what you think of like alcoholism is like, oh, somebody who's like drinking a case of beer every single day. And like we have this preconceived notion of like what an alcoholic is, right? From movies, from TV, from people we know. And the minute you're able to say, well, that's not me, so I'm not an alcoholic. But like, let me just tell you, Bob, I didn't drink often. I could go weeks, months without drinking. But when I drank, I blacked out. Like I would like the consumption of alcohol, it was volume based consumption. And it was like, okay, because I don't drink often, I'm going to allow myself to indulge. Okay. And that's what would happen. And so I got to this place in my life where, especially as I started getting older and my daughter started getting older, where I was like, oh, hangovers are the worst. I'm losing days, not hours. I didn't rebound. I didn't feel good. It was impacting my fitness. It was impacting me at work. It was impacting me everywhere and not in a positive way. And so my husband and I decided to do like a dry January, and then dry January started to be February, March. And then we're like, hey, do you want to just try a year? And now a year is like, we're on year three. So for us, it was like, do it for our health and to kind of regain some clarity. But now that I've not been drinking for so long, I can tell you, I definitely had a problem with alcohol. I don't know that I would classically define myself as an alcoholic, but there definitely was a problem there. And I'm sure if I asked somebody who was running an AA, they'd be like, no, clearly you were an alcoholic. But different, they come in different shapes and sizes. And so, yeah, that was a little bit about like where I started and why I decided to stop. And it was the best decision I ever made, Bob.
It's interesting that term alcoholic, right? Because I've never really said out loud I am, but you're right. And I guess it's really the stigma around it.
It's the stigma. It's because all of a sudden you're viewed differently if you said, I'm an alcoholic. But I'm telling you, anybody who, if you consume a glass of wine every day, two glasses of wine every day, I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, you're an alcoholic. You're somebody who's relying on this to get through the day, right? Like, oh, at the end of every day, I just take the edge off, right? Like, how many excuses could we make to consume alcohol? I've seen mommy groups get together while their kids are playing and the moms are indulging in bottles of wine. And it's like, you need all that wine to watch your kids play on a swing set? Like, I just like, where are we? And that's, you know, and I think like we've normalized these behaviors so much, but like that is a sign that something's probably not right. You know, there's an issue there. Nobody just wants to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. If you look at all of the hoops that new drugs have to go through with the FDA or whatever jurisdiction you're in, it's like, there's no way this would ever be legal if this was introduced today. Like the health effects and the people it's killed. It's not like you said, you go to a party. It's like, hey, Christy, you want some meth? Oh, no, thanks. Why not?
Right.
why don't you want meth? What's wrong with you? You don't like meth? You don't like having a good time? It's like, what are you talking about?
Right. And that, I mean, let's talk about like the social interactions there, because I think that's a whole nother thing. In the beginning, or when I meet people that I don't know or don't know me and don't know that I've gone on this kind of alcohol-free journey, there's this like, why don't you drink? Right? Like it's met with such judgment and like this like people around me can't drink because I don't drink. And I'm like, you do you. Like, I'm not here to judge. I don't care. It's just how I choose to live my life differently and I choose to make different decisions. And I recently was at a party and one of the girls, you know, offered me a drink. And I was like, no, I'm sorry. I don't drink. And literally another girl goes to me, what? You don't drink? Like almost as to like, and the way that like in the language and the tone and like just everything, the way she approached it, I was like, yeah, I don't drink. And then she goes, why? Like, I was like stunned because it wasn't like share your story in a safe place. It was met with such judgment that I was like, because it's poison. And everyone kind of like stopped what they were doing and looked at me, put down their drinks and looked at me as if I like called all their babies ugly. And I was like, it's a personal choice, right? But like, let's call it what it is. Like, alcohol is poison. My body doesn't respond well to it. I don't feel good. It impacts all these parts of my life. We don't indulge, but by all means, like if you feel great drinking, have at it. And people still can't handle the truth of some of that.
Yeah. I remember, you know, when I was certainly younger and somebody said they didn't drink, I immediately thought, okay, there's a story there. Like they woke up in the drunk tank or they woke up under a bus. And I wasn't interested in hanging around them. Like, no, I'm here to have a good time. You're not going to be fun.
Right.
It's really complicated. And when I quit, the last thing I ever wanted to do was make anybody feel judged or anything. But on the other hand, I love what you said about being poisonous. Like, yeah, I'm not going to judge you, but can we just talk about the fact that I love you and I don't want you to die and you are killing yourself every time you do this. And I doesn't mean I'm judging you. But that's still a conversation I'm not super comfortable having.
I think I wasn't as much in the beginning, right? Because to your point, I wanted to kind of preserve the relationships and I didn't want anyone else to feel any way because of me, or I didn't want to stick out as like the odd person out here. But the reality is, right. is, you know, I'm making these choices for my family. My daughter is 16 years old. She's never had a drop of alcohol. By the time I was 16, I can't count how many times I have indulged, okay? And you're not even of the legal drinking age at 16. And I had already been consuming too much alcohol by the time I was my daughter's age. She has no interest in it. She is perfectly fine having a good time without it. She has surrounded herself with a great circle of friends who also don't need it to have a good time. We wanted to set a good example for her because we love her and we care about her. We also tell her, like, listen, in life, you're going to make decisions. And it's okay if you decide to have a drink or you decide to drink when you're older. Like, do whatever you want. Like once you're 21, like make decisions that you feel are appropriate for you. We don't want to make decisions for you, but this is how Dad and I have chosen to like pivot our lives. And she's just very much like, no, like I've seen people be drunk and I've been around that and I have no desire to ever put myself in that position. And I think she's just seen enough to know that she never wants to feel the way she's observed other people clearly feeling.
I mean, I do think you'd mentioned the hangovers. They do get harder. But I used to say, you know, when I was young, oh, I could drink and then I could get up the next day and I'd be fine. And then, you know, I'd drink a couple nights in a row and I could go to work on the next Monday. And I can tell you from watching people that are in their early 20s doing it, they're not immune to it. Like, I didn't know what anxiety was. I didn't have a word for it, but I see it in them. And then when I think back about my, you know, early 20s and drinking a lot, it was like, oh yeah, I was riddled with anxiety. I was just thinking I was tired or grumpy and I would have a couple of drinks and it would go away until the next day. And it's like, mm-hmm. No, it's all of these side effects we think just surface in our 40s. They're there right from the beginning.
Absolutely. I think if I could go and rewatch, and thankfully cameras and phones and video recording devices were not around when we were growing up. I thank God every day for that. But if I could go back and watch younger Christy go through life the way I did with alcohol, I mean, I got to tell you, like, there's definitely times where I'm like, I probably dodged a bullet. I'm alive because somebody wants me to be alive. And, you know, like we put ourselves in compromising situations. I mean, if my daughter ever consumed as much alcohol as I did in a night and like walked the streets at night in a short mini skirt and a tank top coming home from a frat party, like I would literally be praying for her safety. And like, these were things I never thought twice about. Bob, I can't tell you how many like fraternity or sorority parties I left intoxicated, walking around in the middle of the night by myself with not a care in the world. And it's like, wow, all these positions you put yourself in. And it's like, well, it's crazy. And like, I don't know, I would have a big talk with myself. I think if I could have done things differently, I would definitely go and undo some of that. And I, you know, when people are like, oh yeah, but all the fun, all the memories, I'm like, I don't know how many memories you have. I don't remember quite a bit. I mean, like, I remember getting ready. I saw some pictures. I'm sure at some point we had some good times, but like, I don't have memories because alcohol prohibits you from having these memories. Like, it's what it does. It's a side effect. So I don't know. We could sit here and talk about that for like days on end.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm very grateful for not having phones, camera phones. I guess it was even in my, God, would it have been my mid-30s or early 40s when they really started showing up? There was still plenty of embarrassing shit I was doing in my 30s that I'm still glad isn't on camera phones. So yeah, very grateful for that.
Oh, true. Yes. Yes.
Now, one last thing on this topic. Are there things you miss?
You know, I used to think like I missed certain cocktails and beverages that I had, but I got to tell you, like, I've been able to recreate it. My favorite drink of choice was a spicy margarita, like a spicy, spicy, like with like wads of jalapeno and the tahini on the side. Like, I mean, like spicy,
oh,
spicy.
Man.
I have now recreated the most amazing spicy margarita that I definitely don't, I don't have that like, oh, I miss that. Non-alcoholic beers, I'm sorry, but Corona tastes exactly the same. Heineken, exactly the same. Non-alcoholic Guinness, exactly the same. So I can't sit here and say that I miss anything from it. I have been able to satisfy any cravings for a specific taste or something that I enjoyed. But no, I do not miss anything that alcohol did to or for me.
I would love that recipe for spicy margaritas because I've gone deep into non-alcoholic beers. And yes,
I will happily.
All those ones you've mentioned are awesome. I've found some great ones.
And IPAs, Athletic Brew,
oh my God, so good.
Makes some great ones. Like those are always standards in my house. So like we always have non-alcoholic beer. Like we actually have a beer fridge. It's stocked, but none of it has alcohol in it.
Oh man, so good, Christy. God, there's so many of these threads that I'd love to pull on and sit here all day. But we're running out of time. So what are you most excited about next?
Oh my God. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm planning for 10 years from now and other days I'm trying to plan for 10 minutes. I think what I'm most excited about is the possibility of what's next. And I'm just going to like surround myself in that. I have spent the past 13 years building my career in customer success and building a brand, which I'm very proud of and one that I can stand on confidently. And I feel like, yes, it's built on authenticity and credibility and all these great things. I'm excited for all the doors that have opened and will open for me. So I don't know that there's any one thing I'm like, yeah, I can't wait for this thing. I'm so excited for all of the opportunities that I have in front of me. And every single day, whether it's a new conversation with a new friend, right? This is an opportunity that came out of that. I'm excited for all of those. So not one thing, but just the future.
Yeah, there's something really beautiful about that, right? And even coming back to showing all yourselves or your entire self on LinkedIn. Like when you do that and you bring everything you are to conversations like this and to your content on LinkedIn, it's going to lead to, I mean, yeah, we could sit here and plan our next 5 years or 10 years and you could have a conversation that could change everything and open doors that you could never have planned for and never have imagined. And that's a beautiful idea.
It is. And it's one that I've learned to embrace because, Bob, I was a planner. I was like, oh, here's my 3-year plan, my 5-year plan, my 10-year plan. And let me tell you, any plan I ever had, out the window. I have never achieved anything on a 3, 5, 10-year plan. And so what I've learned is like embrace what's possible and embrace the opportunities that will present themselves and lean into those. And so by doing that, I've redefined my life and my career multiple times. And I know that I will do it multiple times again.
I cannot thank you enough for this, Christy. This has been, oh my God, such an amazing conversation. It means so much to me.
Bob, we laughed, we cried, we planned for the future. I mean, I don't know that I've ever done that in an hour. So it has been probably one of the best conversations I've had where I think you created a a safe place for me to be authentically me and to share some things that most people don't know about me. So I can't wait to share this.
Yeah, me too. That means so much to me. And of course, needless to say, if people like what they've heard and they love Christy as much as I do, you can find her on LinkedIn along with the rest of the world. And we'll put links to all the other awesome places you hang out in the show notes.
Awesome, Bob. Thank you so much for having me today. Thank you for this conversation. And more importantly, thank you for being a new friend.
Amazing. Nothing makes me happier. Thank you so much.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.